Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, podcast audience. This is Kenny Hodge, producer, co-producer of Hodge & Hodge Podcast Radio. And as scheduled, Thursday morning, 10 o'clock, we have the distinct pleasure of having Mr. Norris, who is a senior consultant for blue-collar workers, and he deals mainly in the act of advising employees on their rights with respect to being injured at work. Good morning, Mr. Norris, and how are you doing today?
Top of the morning to you, young man. Thanks for having me on again this week. I really appreciate it.
Hey, let me tell you, again, we don't get the live feed call-ins at this time like I expected. But I get a lot of feedback at work, and trust me, the time you spent with educating federal and in particular postal employees on Thursday morning, it is definitely appreciated.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, it circled back to me as well. I have talked to a few people who listen to the podcast, so that I think it's a great thing that we're doing. By empowering people, because that's what this platform is for, you know. So
exactly. And again, anybody who understands or listens to it, I'm a firm believer in education without application. It's just a waste of time. And the information that you provide on this podcast as it educates Pulse employees, I can tell you firsthand, I see the benefits of it. And I talk to employees, and I'm happy to refer them to you for guidance. And again, one of the things that they really like is it's not a postal. Excuse me, it's not a postal employee. It's not a Columbus. It's not a postal program. It's not a Columbus program. This is a federal program. So anything that Mr. Norris puts out to you, and I like the way you present your information, it's always backed up with a federal reference that you can go and read and educate yourself. This way we can learn to stop walking around holding on to the coattails of others, and we can open our eyes and lead from the front because we've been educated on what it is we need to do.
Exactly. And if you don't mind, we can segue this morning. I want to give the audience a little history as to where all this even come from, where your benefits even started, how you're protected, because I hear it all the time, people not knowing what their rights are and how this even came about. So I know each week we talk about different dynamics of filing a claim, but if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Hodge, I'd like to talk about where even the option of filing a claim even comes from.
You got the mic, big brother. Go ahead.
Okay. So let's open the show with FECA this morning. And FECA, I am saying FECA, Federal Employees Compensation Act of 1916. You can Google that and get a little history on that. I even put it on the website, bluecollarfic.com, where you guys feel free to go to that site and get a lot of your information as it pertains to you as an injured worker. So, the Federal Employees Compensation Act of 1916. Approximately 3 years before that, Congress was looking at the fact that all the states had something in place when the employees got hurt on the job. Now, it varied from state to state because each state has its own legislation and set of beliefs on how coverage should be extended for federal, their state employees. So the federal government's like, well, we're the federal government, we're the lawmakers. Why don't we have something in place that protects our own? And back then, a lot of Congress people, lawmakers, or whatnot, their families worked in the office with them. The wife may be the office manager, the daughter, the son may be the front desk person, and so on and so forth. So they got together. It's like, hey, we need to put something together that protects us when we get hurt on the job. So they voted under Woodrow Wilson in 1916. They passed a law called the Federal Employees Compensation Act, which now federal employees have some type of medical coverage along with other benefits if they're ever hurt on the job. Now, you fast forward to 2018, this law has been virtually unchanged for 102 years. Yes, there has been a few amendments along the way, but we all know the lawmakers are going to add amendments that makes the coverage even better. They're not going to take away from themselves. Well, you guys fall under that protection, okay? Medically speaking, you got the same benefits as the president, which is pretty powerful. So what are some of the biggest amendments that happened over the last 102 years? In 1974, they amended this act with two major changes. Or additions, rather. 1974, you have the ability to choose your own position when you get hurt. They passed that, or better yet, amended the act in 1974. And later on that year, they added COP, or traumatic injuries, which is continuation of pay. So those have been the two major changes or additions to the act in 102 years. And it's the same in Ohio as it is for federal employees in Hawaii, Alaska, Texas, Florida. You guys all have the same protection. So that is huge. And that's one of the reasons why I like this program, and it gives me the flexibility to work with people all across the country because the same laws apply. So the Federal Employees Compensation Act of 1916 is the law that's protecting you guys and giving you your rights to, A, when you get hurt, you get to choose your own position. And as I mentioned in the previous week's podcast, I back up everything that I tell you guys because I'm not asking you to take my word for it. I'm giving you the information, and you go look it up and research it for yourself. That way you feel comfortable with the information I'm sharing with you. So you have the ability to choose your own position, been around since 1974. And I want to say it's FECA Law 8103, the third paragraph. Okay? So look it up. And COP came about, I want to say, October of 1974. It's facing at the moment. I don't have that information in front of me. But that's for traumatic injuries only, which we can cover that at another time. But I just kind of want to open the show with help you guys understand what FECA is and how long it's been around, because most people never heard of it. However, on the CA form that you guys are using, it references FECA all the time. But again, a lot of us are so busy just trying to fill out the paperwork and get it turned in that you're just skipping over all this information that's right there in front of you. So hopefully this helped a few people. If you ever hear that, you know what it is, and then you also understand your level of protection and your rights once you get hurt. Because, like I tell most people, you get pushed back from the agency by design. You get pushed back from supervisors by design, or ignorance, or a combination of both. But let those people get hurt, and their eyes are going to be open, too, to a lot of things that they're giving you pushback on. So, again, Federal Employees Compensation Act of 1916. Google it and read up on it.
As always, Brother Morris, I always appreciate how you deliver the message, again, in a nice, it can break it down. And again, when you understand the rights, and Mr. Norris has went over some history for you of where your rights came from. Again, when you take the time to hear that or understand that, it is intended to empower you more so that you understand what it is that you are that's been set aside for you. Not so much. I don't want you to think that you're taking money from the company, because that's not what you're doing. Hold on one second, Mr. Norris. I think we've got a caller.
Okay.
Hello, caller from the 218 area code. How are you doing today? 281 area code. I'm sorry. How are you doing today? Okay, I guess that caller just wanted to listen. Didn't mean to put you on blast or make you drop off the podcast, but... But, yeah, again, I always appreciate you educating the folks. Again, we have to, and I'm a big believer, I'm a firm believer in repetition, because, again, we have very busy lives. All this information is there for you. But if I can get sessions like the one we have on Thursday mornings with a subject matter expert, to put this on a podcast so you can listen to it as you drive to work. You can listen to it as you walk around at work, as long as you're in a stationary area. I think that that's a better avenue or a better vehicle for me to get this information out to you. And I'm so glad that we have Mr. Norris with us. So now we understand where your rights came from. And we also understand that this is a federal law. This is not, and again, I work in Columbus, so most of my attention goes to my employees in Columbus, but this is not a Columbus law, and that's very important.
No,
you have to understand. And I think we have to get people to understand that Columbus law will not override federal law. So if the federal law tells you you have 30 days to file that CA1, for example, then that's what you have. Columbus law, you cannot downgrade a federal law. No state has that authority. So when we tell you that you have 30 days on that CA1, and let me tell you, I like to use that as a reference, because I spent over 35 years in a post office. And until you told me that, Ms. Sinaris, I never knew that. I was always in no matter what capacity I served in the post office, whether it was management or on the union side, and I served in both capacities, I've always been educated that the CA1 must be filled out that night. In fact, in the post office, that we go as far, well, they go as far to train their managers that if the employee doesn't fill it out that night, that they'll fill it out. So, again, that was mind-blowing to me. On a CA1, again, when you said we have 30 days, I've always been under the impression that that has to be done that night. And I've always educated people to get it done that night.
Right. Well, the thing about it is, if it's convenient for a person to do that, then, yeah, you would get it done. But let's say there's a traumatic experience where that person is unconscious. What if it's an auto accident? How can they fill out paperwork if they're not awake?
Well,
no matter
what,
if the supervisor filled it out. Say again?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. If they weren't awake to do it or to start that CA1, then management did it. And they always did it. And go ahead, bro.
But even if you break it down, even if management completed it, right, that person has to agree to it. You need their signature. And
right.
Management is to fill out page 2. By law and direction of that CA1, which you go to page 4, it tells you page 1 is to be completed by the injured worker. And again, I reference back to page 4. Yeah, I'm not saying wait 30 days. I'm saying you have 30 days from the date of injury, you know? So, well, for the listeners, I just want to make sure that they're very clear on that. It doesn't mean sit back and wait till day 29 to complete it. It says they give you that time frame to get it done. But, yeah, if you're coherent enough, go ahead and get it done ASAP. Okay.
And again, and I like the way we break it down, because you have 30 days, don't mean you have to use 30 days. And it would just make better sense if I'm injured and I have the ability, the mental capacity to fill that form out immediately, then that just starts my whole benefit packet going faster. So it's in the employee's best interest to fill these forms out as expeditiously as possible. But understand, if for some reason it's not done, then management should not be filling that form out for you.
Right.
Unless
while we're on that, Mr. Hodge,
go ahead.
Let's really drive this home too, guys. Page 3 of the CA forms is the receipt page. Make sure when you turn that paperwork in, you keep a copy of page 1 for yourself. Page 2 is for the agency to complete. They have 10 working days, not 10 days, 10 working days to get your claim filed with the Department of Labor. But page 3, when you walk into your supervisor's office and notify them that you're filing the claim, stand there, have them sign that third page, you sign and date it, and give it back to you. And if you go to page 4 of your CA forms, the second paragraph, it tells the supervisor, first sentence, sign it and give it back to the injured worker at the time of submission. That is your proof that your claim, that you gave your claim to your agency. And I hear it all the time that people, they were busy, told me to come back later on that day and so on and so forth. So when you talk to me, I'm going to really drive that home. Because, again, if they don't file it in 10 days, you're panicking and getting worried about, you know, your things not moving forward. You got proof that you gave it to them. And then we will move forward anyway, and I'll talk to you on an individual basis on what to do next. But just get that copy of that receipt page. It's very important.
And speaking of the receipt page, about within the last 30 days, and I won't mention any names, but we had an employee in Columbus who had that happen, and I believe they contacted you, Mr. Norris, 30 days. And the claim was denied, and the department, OWCP, received it 30 days after the date of her receipt. Now, this employee did contact you. I'm pretty sure you provided her guidance.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, whatever guidance you provided to her was put out on the work floor. So a lot of people got to hear that, because up until recently, postal management, and again, when I say postal management, I speak specifically of the managers in Columbus, Ohio, have been sitting on these forms, not maintaining any timeline. So when this employee filed her claim and got the receipt page, and now I believe she's dealing with her union pertaining to a 30-day submission time for the post office, which should be 10, it let other employees in the building know that, again, you have to follow up on the status of your claim. But one of the first things you must do is receive that receipt page, because that's your documentation that allows you to follow up. So that was a wonderful thing, and that was information put out on a wide basis based on actual case study. So an employee turned a form in, took the Postal Service 30 days to turn it in, because that employee was being given guidance by Mr. Norris. They understood that it's supposed to be 10 days. Now, here we go with that empowerment process. If I understand it's supposed to be 10 days, but you took 30 days and I have a receipt, again, now what is my course of action? And that course of action is resonating all over the post office, and the latent function is management now are starting to get those forms turned in a little more timely. So, again, I don't I'm telling you. I'm telling you what I see, because I keep my hands in a lot of things. Again, I'm currently a union president that's suspended from his position. So, again, because I'm still in the help employees, mail handlers in particular service, I kind of become an advocate for all employees in that building. Again, because if I have the knowledge on anything that you're doing, I don't really care if you're a clerk, a carrier, a mail handler. If I have the capacity and the knowledge or the connections, meaning I know groups of people who can provide better direction, I act as an advocate for all employees in Columbus. So there's firsthand knowledge. There's firsthand an example of when you know what you know, you can make management do the right thing.
And it doesn't have to be combative. All we're doing is following the rules that the Department of Labor put in. And I'm quick to tell people, hey, pull out page 4 of the CA1 audit here and read it for yourself. It gives you instruction, and it gives the supervisor instructions, time frame, everything. So I'm not making this up, and it's not about going and being combative with anyone, you know. And those who meet me face-to-face, I'm known to pull out a highlighter, highlight it, give it to you, and say, hey, look, if you do have any problem with your supervisor, show this to them. It also shows, too, that if they impede you from filing your claim in any shape, form, or fashion, which is your right to file it, no matter if it's ridiculous or not, if your agency believe it or not, that doesn't matter. You have the right to file a claim, okay? If they impede it in any type of way, they're looking up to a $500 fine and or up to a year imprisonment. So that's extreme, but that's what they could potentially be facing for impeding you. And part of impeding means not filing your paperwork in a timely fashion, which is 10 working days. And I say working, I put emphasis on that because I want that to resonate with the listeners. It's 10 working days, okay? But the cool part about the program that I offer, it doesn't matter when they do it because you're going to get medical attention immediately. Regardless, your claim is open, closed, submitted. None of that matters to them.
Yeah, and the employee, again, the employee who this happened to, I guess, had their fill of postal nonsense. So they took pride in making sure we got that information out to everybody. So, again, I do thank you for that. But and when you say, and again, you constantly tell us that it doesn't have to be combative. And let me tell you something. It's not supposed to be combative. If I got hurt at work, the last thing I need is to have a confrontation, a non-productive confrontation with anybody right now, especially the supervisor responsible for filing my paperwork. But unfortunately, those people who work in the post office are a direct result of lack of training in a lot of cases, or supervisors just don't care about people as people. It usually ends up being combative when we deal with injuries in the Postal Service. It's just a byproduct of what it is. But what I tell employees is I'll be your advocate so you don't have to get combative with the Post Office. And I don't want to get combative with the Post Office. But if we have to have a confrontation, then let me speak for you because I understand the vernacular. And I understand that I don't have a problem telling you, listen, you know you have 10 days to get this in. You can sit here and go round and round if you want to. But the point I'm just making is we don't have to be combative. But if confrontation is needed, then you locate me and I'll spearhead that fight for you. Because when we get confrontational with management, if part of that confrontation deals with me outlining federal laws or stating federal facts, that minimizes the confrontation. And again, it angers them because they don't know a lot of times, and it sounds so funny, but they get upset if anybody tries to tell them. So they don't know. They don't really want to know. And when you know what they're supposed to know, automatically is going to trigger a little bit of confrontation. But have no fear, because you have people in Columbus, people being Kenny Hodge, that's there to be an advocate for you, so you don't have to get in that confrontation with them. And part of the reason, right, I can be a strong advocate for you is because you get to talk to Mr. Norris, with Mr. Norris on Thursday mornings. I talk to him all the time. So I'm never going off half-cocked. Because, again, before I confront management, I might call Brother Anthony. Yo, Anthony, this is what I'm looking at. Help me here. So even I, again, I've got it by his empowerment. And if I can use that empowerment to help make your situation better, then that's what I do.
Good. And everybody in. Because here's the thing, too, Nash. They're just people. Yeah, they work in management, but they put their pants on one leg at a time, just like you. And they just may learn something from you. Like, you know what? I didn't know that. Or I never read that. But like Mr. Hodge just mentioned, you know, you take page 4 of a claim in the in your supervisor's office with you and show it to them. You say, well, according to this, which is coming from the Department of Labor, signed off by the U.S. government, you have 10 working days to get my paperwork to the Department of Labor. So, hey, that's pretty cool.
And again, that's how I like to have confrontation with them. Exactly like you said, I'm not just going in there beating my gums or just talking excessively to them. I've got some documentation in my hand that says, hey, listen, Mr. and Mrs. Manager, you know, I understand your reluctance to do this because postal management feels that they have accidents, it reflects on them. So I understand your reluctance, but let me give you federal law for a second. And once you start a conversation or engaging conversation where you're talking laws and not perception, oh, we can get them to come around very, very quickly. But it's not easy.
Hey, I respect that you're busy. You got a lot on your plate. So let's go ahead and sign this receipt page right now, right? That's my proof that you have this paperwork. Huh? And I'm not making this up. It's on the fourth page, you know? I had one guy, just real quick, there in Columbus, older gentleman, been at the post office forever, you know, and, you know, he said in his thinking, he had a couple previous injuries that he filed claims for that were denied for obvious reasons, and most of it being timely filed. So he just didn't believe. He was one of the hardest people I ever worked with. And I sat down with this gentleman, got my highlighter out, went over page 4. We spent probably 45 minutes just on page 4 alone. And I was trying to get him to understand that it didn't matter to me and it should no longer matter to you what happened in the past, because this piece of paper is showing you what was done wrong. Now, moving forward, do it this way. When I got that claim open and accepted, he couldn't believe it. I said, I'm not doing anything special. We just following the rules. So I want to empower the listeners with something that simple. Man, just follow the rules and go to page 4 and read it for yourself. I mentioned FICA to you guys today. Google FICA. Get the information for yourself. Go to bluecollarfic.com. We put a lot of information out there that will definitely empower you. And that's the role we play in all this. It's about empowerment.
Hey, Mr. Norris, I appreciate your time. We're down to about 30 seconds left, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to go ahead and have your closing remarks.
Again, guys, I'm here to help. It's no cost to pick my brain. It's no cost to engage me in the process, but it could cost you everything if you don't. So use my knowledge and my experience to further your cause. And until next week, I look forward to sharing some more information with you guys.
Hey, this is Ken Hodge, again, from Hodge to Hodge Podcast, conversing with Mr. Norris from Blue Collar Workers, always giving us a bountiful meal when it comes to setting the table for us to understand and digest the process and the concept of making sure we get assistance or federal aid when we get injured at work. It is my sincere hopes that we never get injured at work, but that's why they call them accidents. because they are unplanned events. So when these accidents creep up on you, understand, I want you to work safe, but in the event that you get injured, here's information on what actions you should take. So everybody have a great day. And Mr. Norris, I'll talk to you next Thursday.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
Take care.